There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And I wonder if people are getting impatient with the Texans hiring an OC. I don't think you should. You know, they're taking their time. They're interviewing all the candidates they want to talk to here. And they've got two interviews today. Nick Caley, passing game coordinator for the Rams. A McVay tree guy, but also a Patriots guy. If we're just going by number of years, he's more a Patriots guy than he is a Rams guy. Very well thought of. He's the favorite of Texan fans right now, according to a poll that Tyler Milner put up yesterday. Pretty sizable favorite. But Nick Caley and then Bill Lazor, who is a significant branch on the Seth Payne coaching tree. Which also includes Jeff Stoutland, the O-line coach of the Eagles as well.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I'm a little bit uncomfortable about that, like as far as leaning into it, because I got to try to be objective as, about this as possible. Yeah. So I just, like, from my personal experience, Bill is super, super smart. And he's had three different stints as an offensive coordinator, both for 2 years apiece. The way they listed on some of the... and some of the articles that leads people to believe that he was one and done. He got 1 year and done at all of those. Because they're looking at the years like their school years instead of the actual seasons. So he's had three different stints. All three of them were with coaches who would never end up being head coaches again. So they're kind of in the last 2 years of those coaches.
Right.
Matt Nagy, Joe Philbin, and Marvin Lewis, who ended up, you know, leaving / retiring.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, yeah, in the spirit of impartiality, because you do, you know Bill, one of the things we have said on this show with Bobby Slowick, with Bill O'Brien, is that the Texans never had a genuinely good offense under either of those guys.
Right, right.
So the numbers, for Bill Lazor, the numbers don't reflect well from that standpoint either.
The best year he had as an offensive coordinator was in 2014 with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. Mm-hmm. Joe Philbin was the head coach. They ended up 11th in scoring that year.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they've you know, his best years have been kind of 15th or 16th in scoring. So yeah, there's reasons that people wouldn't get excited about it. I also just know from knowing the situations that he was in and knowing him personally, there's more to it, but I get and understand why the resume looks, you know, like it's not something that excites people.
Sure, and I would say counterpoint to ourselves in defense of Bill Lazor, if we were making a case for him, is that he never had peak Deshaun Watson or CJ Stroud at his quarterback at any of those places.
Right. Yeah, I think that if you look at the various guys, whether, you know, it was Andy Dalton in the last couple years of Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati. You know, Andy Dalton's probably the best quarterback that he had a good chunk of time with.
Unquestionably as a coordinator, yeah.
Yeah, because other than that, it's Justin Fields, it's Nick Foles, it's a young Ryan Tannehill. So there's that element to it. I think the biggest thing with Bill is that in NFL circles, people that know Bill really respect his opinion and his intelligence and everything else like that. He's been consistently employed for going on a long time, a long, long time.
He's 52 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of experience there. And I think a lot of that, I think with both Gerard Johnson and Bill Lazor, I don't like going to a quarterback and specifically asking him, hey, who do you think the offensive coordinator should be? But you're going to perhaps just through conversations about how the end of the year went, what did you like, what didn't you like, whatever information you can glean from CJ Stroud specifically is probably going to be a big factor in evaluating Gerard Johnson and Bill Lazor.
Yeah.
And they were both working with him 2 years ago when he had a very promising season, but then both Gerard and Bill were working with CJ this year when he struggled. So, D'Amico and Nick have had a chance to watch that operation for 2 years and probably get a pretty good feel for what either of those guys brings to the table. I also think it's important for both Gerard Johnson and Bill Lazor to point out, I don't think you can look at them and say, okay, well, I know what kind of a scheme he wants to run. It's not like these guys are products of spending years and years with Kyle Shanahan or anything like that.
So you don't think if either of those guys stay, there's a decent chance they may be running a different system next year is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, and Bill's been in multiple different areas and had to deal with, you know, multiple different quarterbacks and the head coaches. When it's an offensive head coach like Matt Nagy, that's going to be a lot different than a lot of things that Kyle Shanahan was going to want to do. So, yeah, I think that that's probably part of the conversations, because people will ask, well, how come you have to interview a guy who's already been in-house for 2 years? It's because of that dynamic especially. Like, okay, what's your plan? What's your vision? How do you want to call plays? What do you see best for CJ? What do you think maybe, without selling out Bobby Slowick, what did Gerard and Bill think that maybe could have been done differently this
year? That's the first question you're asking. What would you, if, for an internal candidate, is what would you do differently? Because if you're doing the same thing, what you're doing is what got you there, you know?
Right, by and large.
So that's Bill Lazor. So he interviews today. So does Nick Caley, who has history with Nick Caserio. They intersected at the with the Patriots from 2015 through 2020. They were in the building together there. So Nick knows more than a little bit about Nick Caley. And you brought this up, Seth. Albert Breer mentioning that Nick Caley lost out on the Patriots OC job in 2022, 2023, whatever year they hired Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, he was up for the job that year.
Yeah. And he remained the tight ends coach. Yeah. So they didn't make him the offensive coordinator. And that's the biggest question people bring up is, all right, he'd been on the staff for 5 years there. Why did Belichick choose to make a defensive coordinator, a special teams coach, co-offensive coordinators instead of this guy, Nick Caley? But then two years later, after Nick Caley the next year goes to the Rams, when Gerard Mayo is looking to hire an offensive coordinator, Gerard Mayo, according to Albert Breer, offered Nick Caley $3 million per year, or almost $3 million per year. And Caley turned it down to go back to the Rams in 2024. That was the 2024 season.
Yeah.
Last year, basically, McVay made him the passing game coordinator, and it looked very much like, all right, at least one team really wanted Nick Caley, and Nick Caley thought, well, I'm going to be more careful about which opportunity I take first for my first stint as an offensive coordinator.
We've talked about this probably two or three times now on the show today. The offer that Albert Breer talked about for $3 million for Gerard Mayo to bring Nick Caley, who'd never called plays before, never been an offensive coordinator before, to come in and be the OC for the Patriots this past season. And at first I was like, well, that's really interesting that he turned it down that much money. People need to understand $3 million puts you easily in the top like three or four offensive coordinators when it comes to pay.
Yeah.
Part of me, like, so at first my reaction was, wow, Nick Caley's being really choosy about where he goes, which I'm sure he is. Like, he looked at New England and said, is $3 million to murder my career possibly? Because Gerard Mayo did end up getting fired after a year. There would have been an element, now that I'm looking at this again, there would have been an element for me too if I were Nick Caley of like, does Gerard really know what he's doing up there that he's offering me $3 million a year? Not that you don't have confidence in yourself, but like, okay, I've never done this. He's having me come in here and do all these things and paying me more than everybody else. That might not last up there.
I also wonder too, who knows what the dynamic was with Nick Caley when he was with the Patriots and Belichick chose to go instead.
Yeah.
Instead of having Nick Caley be the offensive coordinator, he had Patricia and Joe Judge be the offensive coordinators. There's a little bit of an element of like, all right, what was he offered and did he want to stay in New England or not? Given that you could read the writing on the wall there that New England was in its dying last breaths there. Yeah. Tom Curran, Ben, if I didn't tell you to get this ready for this segment, Tom Curran from New England talked about this at the time. Curran's very plugged in up there about why it was hard to find an offensive coordinator that year that they used two non-offensive coordinators.
I think the larger issue here for the Patriots and their coaching staff and their personnel people, they have a very small staff on both. And the reason is, it's a hard place to work. Guys are not beating down the doors to come and work for the New England Patriots. It's actually the opposite. Guys are streaming out the door and have been in personnel and coaching for a number of years. Nick Caley would have gone if he had the opportunity. Josh McDaniels had to be kept here. The guys that they have now are guys who are, you know, out of chances where they were and came back in Patricia and Judge. So I think that's one thing that's really interesting about this. That's what's hard about what the Patriots are trying to execute. You would think, well, don't you want to work for the Patriots? Well, Bill Belichick's a hard guy to work for. You don't get titles. Nobody makes a lot of money. And the pressure is excessive. We hear over and over again about how difficult this place is to work. So it's not a wonder that there aren't a million coaches on this staff who are suitable and ready to go. And when they are, they're guys who, you know, are former lacrosse players or all went to John Carroll University. Or it's really an interesting and unscrutinized aspect of the coaching continuity. They don't have a lot of coaches.
Shot at John Carroll University right there.
Kidding,
where,
man.
Where both Nick Caserio and John Caley went, right?
Did
John
Nick, Caley Nick, go to, Caley, no, Nick Caley. Yeah.
Sorry, Nick Caley. Nick Caley went to John Carroll.
He went to John Carroll, yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, all right, if I'm trying to make a case for Nick Caley, but they didn't make him the – like, Belichick chose not to make Caley the offensive coordinator and instead went with a defensive coordinator and a special teams coordinator. Was Caley in a position to say, like, nah, Nick, I don't – or no, Bill, I don't want to be the offensive coordinator? Or was it that Bill was doing his old head games thing where I'm going to – this guy's going to basically do what he's told, and I'm going to keep him – I'm going to keep my thumb on top of him. And, yeah, he'll have his input, but he's not going to be the offensive coordinator until he earns it. I have no idea.
Yeah, the latter sounds like the safer bet, especially, you know, kind of feeling how things – that was at a time – like, that was at a time, too, where Belichick could probably feel himself losing his grip on the team a little bit, maybe, you know, like, it was, like you said, those were the dying days of the dynasty right there.
Yeah.
But
other than that, I mean, there hasn't been, it's not like there's a huge buzz about Caley. There's not really is there a huge buzz about any of the offensive coordinators that they've interviewed so far?
I mean, Gerard probably has the biggest buzz because there's a lot of Aggies here. He's been in the building and everybody likes him, you know?
I think though, and I think with Gerard, the X factor is, all right, look, I've been one that's been stumping for, I want a guy, because you've got a young defensive-minded head coach, I want a guy who can be a head coach of the offense and who has experience. But I can't ignore the fact that there have been plenty of brilliant offensive coordinators who, at some point you get your first job.
Yeah.
Like, and usually, ideally, your first offensive coordinator or passing gate coordinator job is underneath an offensive-minded head coach who's kind of like your mentor and your tutor. But plenty of coordinators have done it before. So that's the unknown with Gerard, is that he's got very limited professional coaching experience. Is what he brings to the table, does he have such juice that you don't worry about the inexperienced side or the fact that your quarterback's in his third year?
Yeah, and I feel,
and
like
that's something that really only the guys who are in the building could answer.
That's exactly right. We don't know. You know, we know what, you know, we know what interviews with Gerard look like outside of the building, but the juice and the interaction and that dynamic you're talking about, stuff that we don't get to, only they get to see that. We don't get to see that. Got a question. This is a question that was sent into the mailbag on my podcast, the Utopia Football Podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review if you can. If you guys had to guess, will the offensive coordinator hire end up being the most impactful move of the offseason for the Houston Texans?
That's a great question. I think so. I think that's, not to overly simplify it, but the answer is simply yes, because I think there's guys on the offense who underperformed relative to what, how we've seen them play in the past. I saw guys who I know are intelligent players play like stupid players at times.
Yeah.
And all of that speaks to just a lack of a plan and a cohesive teaching of exactly what you want from week to week and throughout the year. It just looked disjointed and disheveled and messy. And a lot of that, it's not just the play calling specifically. It's the execution falls on the offensive coordinator as well. And that comes down to not just designing the game plan, but teaching and coaching the game plan and attention to detail and all of that. And we just saw very, very little of that. So, yeah, to get the most out of the guys that you have, yes. But then also to get the most out of what I'm expecting it to be a pretty heavily offensively focused offseason.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to bring in a free agent on offense. You're probably going to draft pretty heavily on offense. I know best player available, et cetera, but there's a sliding scale for that. So, yeah, I think the offensive coordinator hire, especially with a defensive-minded head coach, is the biggest dynamic.
It would be hard to think of something that's more impactful than this. Like, as I try to go through in my head, like, it's hard to imagine the 25th overall pick being more impactful than whoever you're hiring to not just run the offense, but fix the offense. It'd be one thing, Seth, if it were a passing of the baton of a top five offense. You know, Bobby leaves to go get a head coaching job. If it were last year, he leaves and goes get a head coaching job, and you're handing the baton to an offense that, you know, probably needs a few things tweaked, but it's trending in the right direction. Or if it were a highly functioning offense and you're bringing in somebody at that point, the only like major impact one way or the other would probably be downward more than upward, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but like the 25th overall pick, or is there like a Diggs move out there or a Danielle Hunter signing that's more impactful than the OC? We'll see, but I can't imagine it.
I think if you talk about how appetizing is this job, and will the Texans have the pick of the litter? I think that's probably where people are the most let down in terms of just feeling like, okay, there would be more buzz about this. Is that if you look at Bill Lazor's career, you know, his first time as a coordinator in the NFL was under Joe Philbin, who's an offensive-minded head coach. Yeah. So it's not really his show, but it's also like Joe Philbin, it's not like working for Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other two stints that he had was also with Matt Nagy, who was the play caller, then wasn't the play caller, then was the play caller again. It kept vacillating, but he's an offensive-minded guy. So in those two instances, he was in a situation where his fate was probably going to be kind of tied to the offensive head coach.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful, and you got to be really careful in which situation you choose.
Totally.
Because all of a sudden, you get to it and you've had a couple of opportunities, and if you haven't had good quarterbacks and you haven't had a good coach above you, you start to lose some of that shine and you start to lose some of that buzz.
It's a little like that cut that you found the other day that we played of Mike Tomlin, the new president of the Texans, talking about like who you go work for is important. You know, if you're trying to set your career on a certain trajectory, like make sure you're attaching yourself to the right people. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Nobody's talking about the Joe Philbin tree. Nobody's talking about the Matt Nagy tree. They talk about the Sean McVay tree and the Kyle Shanahan tree and Andy Reid.
And it was, so with Nick Caley, you always got the sense in New England almost that part of it, part of Belichick's method was to beat you down psychologically and maybe, you know, make you believe that, you know, you're not all that special anyway. So, and that he could keep people under his thumb for a long time that way. But so with Nick Caley, when he's there in New England, at some point, I'm guessing there's a reason that he specifically went to the Rams, mm-hmm. you know, the first year he was out of New England, is I got to get underneath a guy that knows what the hell he's really doing offensively.
Yes.
And then is a career stepping stone, obviously. How many guys that have been offensive coordinators or passing game coordinators for McVay have gone on to get other opportunities? I think that's exactly what he did. I think he thought, including last year, he thought, well, I can go be the offensive coordinator in New England with a defensive-minded head coach and a quarterback to be named later, or I can spend another year with under Sean McVay and get the benefit of, A, that education, but, B, also a little bit more of a glow from having been working with Sean McVay. So it was probably a smart career move to turn down that $3 million per year.
He took his career arc and his resume to the dry cleaners. And you know what I mean? Like he had the stench of the Belichick thing on him, and that's, you know, for some that's not great. So we'll see. Those two interviews are today, and we'll see if the Texans continue to add more candidates to this OC pool. But we'll have you all squared away here on Sports Radio 610. Also a reminder, we're on Radio Row next week. Thanks to Flight by Yingling. We really appreciate them helping send us there. Great partner for us here on this trip coming up to the big game. So I was I get all the newsletters from TMZ and People Magazine and things like that to keep my toe in the pop culture water. And email I got from TMZ yesterday that they got hold of the video that was shot walking through OJ's house the day after he died.
Which OJ is that?
That would be
McDuffie?
OJ. No. That would be OJ Orenthal James Simpson.
Oh, the that OJ.
Yeah, that OJ. Okay. I probably should have specified which OJ. So they got hold of the video walking through his house after he passed away so they could take inventory of what's going to get sold off in the auction to pay everybody off that he owes money to. The video was fascinating going through OJ's house. In honor of the 9 years he spent in the hole for stealing back his memorabilia, the 9 most noteworthy things that I could make out in the video. We will tell you what those are. React coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. We're headed to Radio Row next week. Very excited about that. Thanks to Flight by Yingling for sending us there for sure. All right, so Seth, I got my 3 times daily email from TMZ yesterday. I get several emails from TMZ to notify me when they've got new stories popping on the website and on social media and whatnot, because I got to be kept up to speed on this stuff. What are all the celebrities doing out there? We know that recently O.J. Simpson passed away within the last year. I don't remember the exact date, but TMZ got a hold of the video that I guess it's normal when you're getting ready to auction a bunch of stuff off.
Yeah.
That you have somebody, the auctioneers or whoever, the company walks through and just videos everything. And OJ owes a lot of people a lot of money. So this, and that was a big thing.
The estate's going to be liquidated to pay off some of those debts.
Yes. So. And obviously OJ, you would think, would have a lot of interesting things in his home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they got a hold.
I mean, presumably, I just wouldn't have known. Yeah, how many he might have auctioned off himself over the years, or what have you.
Fair
but it sounds
point.
Like there's some pretty interesting things remaining.
There was. It looked like he was, living in decent quarters. You know, had a nice man cave. Still had.
It wasn't like the old. He didn't keep the old Brentwood home, did he?
No. This is in Nevada. But he had a nice little pool in the backyard. You know, it wasn't a sprawling estate or anything, but if he wanted to go out and sit on a chaise lounge by the pool at night and smoke a cigar, that was available to him.
He had some privacy. He wasn't renting an apartment somewhere.
No, it was a house for sure. Yeah, it was a house. Or maybe a townhome or a patio home.
Good for him. Yeah, OJ. It's,
you know, you love to see everybody live out their waning years in comfort. So they walked through and shot video of the whole place, and there were some interesting things in there. In honor of the 9 years he spent in the hole, ultimately, Here are the nine things that jumped out at me that I saw in this video, Seth. The first one, he had a grand piano there. I never knew OJ to be a musician of any sort, but he had a grand piano. Maybe it was for decorative purposes. But what jumped out was the many family pictures on the base, you know, on top of the piano there, you know, on the flat surface there. And some of the pictures included wedding pictures of him and his ex-wife Nicole.
Oh,
you kids out there! OJ is famous for being found liable of the murder of Nicole in a civil court.
Yeah,
he was acquitted in a criminal court. Yeah,
which I guess it shouldn't surprise you because as he had once pledged that he would spend the rest of his life trying to find the killer.
That was his reminder, probably every day.
And yet, we never actually saw any evidence that he was doing that. It would make sense. You know, he's got to keep his story straight to get. Sean, better there than in the trophy room. So what else did we have? What else was there?
Okay, we'll continue. Number two, there were two baby strollers in there. Two baby strollers in OJ's living room. I'm guessing he maybe had grandkids. I don't know. You bring the grandkids over to see old Grampy Oge?
Does he have grandkids?
I don't know.
Or did he have grandkids?
Yeah,
I like to think that was so he could take walks incognito.
No way.
He would like dress up in a prairie dress and put a bonnet on and a wig, and then he could act like he was pushing a baby stroller, so that way people wouldn't bother him as he was right. walking around the neighborhood.
Right.
And you might think, like, hey, Seth, people love to stop and look at babies. That wouldn't work at all. Not when it's a 6'2" six foot two hulking prairie dress wearing lady.
Right.
They don't want to stop and look at that baby.
No.
Who knows what they're going to see?
You don't even make eye contact with.
Yeah. So he probably was able to go for his strolls with his stroller.
Okay. So that was part. So the baby strollers were part of. So he could just be normal out in. Well, not normal, but so he could go out in public. Right.
Incognito Jay.
Incognito Jay. Yes. He had a ring light in there. You know, we know he did several videos on Twitter from time to time where he'd give his thoughts. Remember, he'd say, hey, world, it's yours truly. He never called himself by name. And then at the end, he would always go, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's smart, though. That ring light, you can get a good one for like $40 at Walmart.
You have an awesome ring light that I've seen. Like
the one that's up at the studio.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good one.
How much
I've got a cheapie at home from Walmart.
I've got a cheapie at home, too, that for the videos I've been shooting lately, I'm not really thrilled with it. How much do you care to tell? Do you care to disclose how much the one you have up here is? Because that one looks really good.
It was like $180 or something.
Okay, that's in my budget.
It does. Look, no, I know. The first time I bought a ring light, I was like, oh, what the hell? Where is my life taking a wrong turn?
Right.
And then you also realize you get to a certain age, ring light does some wonders for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It makes you look about 10 years younger than your stupid lighting that we have in the studio.
Right. And then you're like, oh, wow, we can get paid for doing stuff like this. Oh, neat.
It's an expense on
That's right. He had a Heisman Trophy on his trophy shelf, OJ. If you're just tuning in, we're going through the interesting things on the video that the auction company shot of OJ's place shortly after he died. So he had a Heisman Trophy. I tried to Google. I'm like, man, was that what he was trying to steal back when he got pinched in Nevada to go to jail? Was it the Heisman Trophy? And from what I can gather, it was not. But his Heisman Trophy has a really weird story that was just way too long to read, where it got stolen the night of the murders. And it was very strange. But I don't know if it's the actual Heisman Trophy, but he had one on, or at least a reasonable facsimile on a shelf in his place in there.
I don't know. I know there's some kind of story about now how you're not supposed to be able to sell Heisman Trophies. Probably because it's kind of depressing.
Who governs that?
I don't know. Like several Heisman Trophies have been sold over the years, although there is a ban on the sale of all trophies awarded since 19. So I don't know how you ban the sale of a trophy in a free economy, but they're harder to come by than they used to.
Maybe the Heisman Trust says, hey, if we find out you sold your trophy, we're going to do what they did to Reggie Bush, where they made him persona non grata in the Heisman world.
You know what? Yeah, maybe it's like the big auction houses like Sotheby's and stuff.
Yeah.
They won't delve into that, but maybe you got to do it on eBay, I suppose. I don't know.
OJ had a mini fridge in his bedroom with several Shiner Box in it. So that was his beer of choice. He had one
clear. So he could pretend he was in a hotel room, like he had a mini bar. Except he didn't have to pay $29 for a beer.
He had the little bottles of liquor in there.
Yeah,
that would've been awesome.
That's living right there.
Now, the hook that got me to click on this was was the tease by TMZ was that, hey, take a look at O.J. Simpson's literal deathbed, like the hospice bed that
he actually died.
The bed, and it wasn't like it was in his bedroom. They had like you could see his bed that was his normal bed, kind of shoved up against the wall, and then he had a bed that I guess is a special hospice bed, probably with like bedpan holes and things like that.
Yeah. I've been through experience with that. The people at the medical equipment companies are just, they're fun. They're fantastic to deal with.
You got to be a good person to do that, man.
Yeah. They're just, well, they spend all day, every day with people like who are at their most miserable, like lowest emotional points. And they got to do business with them. Yeah. But they're super cool about, they understand that coming to deliver and pick up is it's not going to be a simple process sometimes.
Would you be an ornery patient in that situation, or would you be a docile patient in that situation? How do you think?
One of my biggest goals in life is to not be on pain meds when I die.
That's one of your goals.
Sounds like a morbid goal.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's literally pretty morbid. But
It is. Very morbid.
There's things you can do to live your life. When you're trying to live healthy and there's always some bastard that's like, hey, everybody's going to die anyway. Not everybody has to die with the last 10 years of their life being absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to live my life in such a way that in the last days of my life, I can not be on pain meds. I can be clear of mind, and I've got arrangements made for time to pull the plug on old Sethers here. All right,
sure.
Let's get rid of this fella. Dead weight.
Seth is gonna muscle through terminal illness. I'm just gonna muscle through it.
No, honestly, it's because of various relatives of mine who have died.
Yeah.
At the very end, when they're in hospice, they do great things for them. Hospice people are saints.
Yeah,
but there is a part where you don't realize all the stuff that you wish you would have said and all of that other stuff. You gotta get a 1 to 3 month lead on it, because a lot of times when they're on a lot of pain meds, they're just not themselves. They're not seeing things clearly, and you don't even know how much is getting through. So.
Three more things that jumped out at me on this video. He had books on the table, Seth, including the mosquito bowl. The one that was on top of the pile was the mosquito bowl by Buzz Bissinger. You're the book reader on this show. Have you read The Mosquito Bowl by Buzz Bissinger?
I've never read that. I don't think I've read Friday Night Lights either. It's tough sometimes when things are famous. No, I never read that. But Buzz Bissinger wrote Friday Night Lights.
He did, yep. He sure did.
And he kind of then disappeared after that.
I think he did. He's a very strange cat, I believe, yeah.
I looked it up. He's addicted to both shopping and sex, and has been to therapy for both.
OJ or Buzz? Wikipedia. Which
Buzz.
One?
Oh. So I guess that's what he's been up to for the last 12 years.
I hope the books did well. If you're shopping and sex can both be very
expensive. That's the problem. No, I think the books did too well.
Yeah,
probably. If you're addicted to shopping and sex, and then you have a hit book that turns into a hit movie and a hit TV show, you're probably not a lot of motivation to work, but also a lot of time for your hobby. Shopping and sex.
Addicted to shopping. Ugh.
There's a way to combine both of those.
Okay,
it's called prostitution.
Yeah. Plus, kill two birds with one stone. All right,
I've got everything I've ever been wanted.
The thing I would be most likely to bid on, I think, because this stuff's all going to auction at some point, would be the golf clubs and the other golf paraphernalia. I feel like that's going to be the thing. Other than the jewelry and the trophies, all the things that have that kind of value attached to them, literal actual monetary value attached to them. I feel like the golf clubs and the other golf paraphernalia might be what goes for the most with OJ.
That's right, yeah. Because
it's usable.
And he was, he was a noted golfer. That was where half the times you'd ever see him interviewed or anything, it was out on a golf
course.
That's
where he spent all his time searching for the real killers. Was on the golf courses.
That's what he suspected. He's like, hey, I'm a big golfer. I've got a lot of acquaintances that I've won money from that might have it in for me.
Yep.
So I'm going to go out and scour the golf courses of America.
Amen.
In states where I feel safe doing so. And where the bankruptcy laws are generous. And I'm going to find that killer, damn it.
Generous bankruptcy laws. The last thing, they did find a box of condoms in the nightstand.
Good for him.
Magnum, of course. Yeah.
That's another thing I'm dedicated to doing when I'm in hospice, is practicing safe sex.
course. Yes. As you should.
I don't want to, you know, I don't want to leave behind any
no pain meds and big condoms.
Yeah. I don't want to spread any of my microbes or, you know, leave a fatherless child in the world.
You're very responsible that way. That's why I respect that.
Always have
you.
Been. That's what they'll put on my tombstone.
This is kind of sad. His estate is suing his son, who apparently, like, literally, like, the day after he died, started squatting in the home. Like, they're trying to get him the hell out of there, and he won't leave. OJ's kid. Yeah.
I would rather be homeless than a squatter, I'd rather go live in a tent somewhere out in a national park than be living in a place that's the actual... you're in a constant lawsuit.
Okay.
Like that's your and you've got yeah no I don't need that.
Okay,
no.
I like that you kind of have a plan for the homelessness. Like no, out in a park with a tent. Like you're gonna have a backpack every day. Like not under.
Yeah,
a
that's where
somewhere.
I spend a lot of time on doomsday prepper websites. Not because I'm planning for doomsday.
Right.
I'm just gonna. In that scenario, that's plan A of my hospice plan. all right. As soon as I run it out of my 50 cal ammo, I'm going to, I'll be
Seth
done
Seth goes
for.
To doomsday websites because he's got, like, he likes to live out doomsday fantasies, you know?
I would live in a tent somewhere in a warmer climate.
I like that. Yeah, in a warmer climate.
Not even
sure.
A tent. I'd live out under the stars with a tarp.
All right. Wait, of those things...
Sean, you read about this. Like, you know, back in the day, rich people, like super rich people would go visit people.
Yeah.
And they would like stay in a tent in the backyard. And it was just... it was kind of... Yeah, like it wasn't... I don't know. Somewhere along the way, we got this notion that like, no, you have to have... You got to have a facsimile of your own bedroom with air conditioning and everything else.
Hey, yeah. Yingling is sending us to Radio Row. We have a really big backyard at our Airbnb. They're sending us there. I don't think it's a camping tent, but it's a huge tent, like a probably like a tailgating tent. Should we sleep out underneath the tailgating tent at Radio Row?
Sleep or pass out.
Pass
one
out.
Of the two.
Yeah, with several empty cans of Yingling, but drink responsibly.
It's easy to be an outdoorsman when you're passed out.
Yes.
You're like, oh, I chose this life.
I've done that many times. hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day for your entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. Remember, the winner will be headed to Vegas with flight and hotel accommodations for you and three guests. Plus, you're all going to get $20,000 to fund the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball tourney. Up next, my demand to the Houston Astros. Do this ASAP. That is next.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Live from the Mo Karam Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Okay, most people enjoy the OJ segment. Hugo texts in, making fun of a dead OJ seems like bad radio. Nothing you've said is actually funny. I beg to differ. And number two...
Hugo, you know what's funny, Hugo? Your dumb name. Okay.
Yeah, the sticking up for OJ Hill is not one that I care to go die on. But Hugo, you
no
do
offense
you,
to other Hugos out there. You guys spell it the right way.
Yeah,
Hugo
yeah.
spells it with two O's.
Especially the restaurant. Yeah, absolutely. All right. No, he doesn't. That would be funny, though. Hugo.
He spells it H-U-G-H hyphen go.
Go.
Like he's a snazzy car.
That would be awesome. Hugo, you
Hugo
should think
the
about,
smart car.
You should think about changing that. All right, so this hit me yesterday. I made this plea earlier in the show, and I'll do it again for the later awaking people and see if you agree with me. And I think Seth is on my side in this. This Alex Bregman thing for me has dragged out long enough. The dancing, kind of just sashaying around each other and like the door is cracked. Is it really? Do we really want him back? We're talking to him. Oh, hey. Oh, yeah, that's right. Boris texted me. I got to call him back. like this whole high school thing that's going on right now with Alex Bregman clearly having eyes on places other than Houston and yet still holding a six-year, $156 million offer reportedly in his hands needs to stop. The Astros need to give him a date. It needs to be soon, and we need to be done with this.
I don't think this is the part of the reporting that I just don't trust, is that it doesn't make any sense to me that the same offer is still on the table, especially with Dana Brown sounding like they've talked about it theoretically and bandied it about, but that's not something you do. It's not like they're... Yeah. Okay, you want me to believe that the Astros are having conversations about whether it's possible while the offer still remains on the table? That doesn't make any sense. So the fact that they moved on and made other moves thinking that Alex Bregman wasn't coming back would also suggest that, no, the same offer isn't on the table.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds a lot more like that, no, we'd have to consider whether or not to give you that same offer again if Scott Boras has called and everything. Because if the same offer, it doesn't make sense. I think that it feels like this is Scott Boras trying to keep the flames burning and make it seem like Bregman is a hotter commodity than he actually is, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a party to that. I don't know if he's just Carlos Beltraning this ultimately and just trying to drag the Astros along as long as possible to try to create an image of scarcity or high demand. And it just, none of it feels right.
Yeah.
I don't want to be used by Scott Boras.
He's clearly trying to use you right now, I think, and it would appear thus far unsuccessfully so.
If the offer is still on the table, then accept the offer or get the hell out.
That's where I'm at too. Like we need to be done with this, and it's making me angry at Bregman, and I don't want to be angry at Bregman. I want this to be an amicable split, like Springer, like Correa, mm-hmm. like Verlander. You know, they made a fair offer to Verlander. I don't blame a 41-year-old guy, whatever he was at the time, taking $43 million each for each of the next 2 years. I don't blame him for that. Gerrit Cole. He could left at the time. He could have handled his business better. But that's the thing. I don't want Bregman to be veering into Gerrit Cole territory. You know what
I'm saying? I think that for me, it's a lot easier to just focus my anger or discontent at Scott Boras himself.
Okay.
I'll do it that way. Whether it's accurate or not, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
So for right now, I'm just thinking this is, who knows if Bregman, you know, suggested that they circle back with the Astros or anything else like that. Who knows? But it's just easier to blame Scott Boras, even though Scott Boras works for Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
Look, Scott Boras is advising Alex Bregman, and did he tell Alex, oh, no, dude, there's way more money out there. Don't even consider the Astros. Don't even consider the Astros offer. That's chicken scratch. That's what I'm looking at it as right now. Maybe we'll find out more later that it wasn't like that.
Dana Brown's acting like the opposite of a motivated GM to get something mm-hmm. done with this whole thing. Here was Dana Brown yesterday. Saying you got a text from Boras. He's like, oh yeah, I should call him back.
Well, I owe Boras a call. He sent me a text, you know, today, so I'll probably end up getting back to him.
Can you imagine if Dana Brown started talking like I do whenever calling somebody back comes up? I'm like, Dana Brown, he's like, yeah, I just don't like talking to people on the phone, you know?
Oh,
it's very time-consuming.
That would be the least desirable part of being a GM in any sport for me is how much time they spend talking on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah, how about back in the day, man? Like, kids, back in the day, it was like a big privilege. At least it was where I grew up.
Yeah.
Like, if you got a phone in your room as a teenager, like, that was a major... That was as big a step as getting a cell phone is now for... What, an 8-year-old? Or how old? What's the youngest people hand cell phones to their kids these days?
I think like the 7th month of pregnancy.
Right?
They put it up to their belly and have them learn their ringtone. Yeah.
There's a sonogram app on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but back in the day, like that was a big deal. Like, man, you'd spend like an hour a night on the phone with your girlfriend and stuff like. You'd have to be pried off of the phone back in the day.
Right. The big things that you could get were the first time you got a wireless phone. That meant your family was going places in the world.
The antenna that you pulled up out of the top of it. Yeah.
And if you got call waiting too.
Oh, call waiting was big. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was this thing kids back in the day called a busy signal that you used to get when you call people. They were on the phone?
Yeah, it was the worst.
If they didn't have call waiting?
You had make it. That's what's so funny about how most people just hate making phone calls anymore. You'd rather spend 4 hours inefficiently texting about something that could easily be fixed in 5 minutes of a 5 minute phone call, because that's how averse you are to the phone. Whereas in the past, you would sit, and if you really wanted to talk to somebody, you'd sit there next to your landline and make a call, get the busy signal,
yep,
and then make a call again 5 minutes later, over and over again. It was the worst.
It was horrible. I get my phone calls, my people I need to call back, that all gets done when I go on a walk. Like, if I go on a walk, yeah, I usually walk like 3 or 4 miles. Takes like an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes. That's when I do all my phone calls.
You know, the nice thing about football coaches is that, or people in football, they're accustomed to, on the coaching side of things, I think phone calls are still a pretty big part of the networking side of things. But they've also got jobs where everybody's got a meeting coming up or something they're working on. So you don't have to worry about being polite about when it's time to go. It's like, all right, hey, man, I got to go.
Yeah.
Boom, that's it.
Yeah.
And nobody gets offended.
Nope.
That's a nice thing about talking to a football coach on the phone.
That's how you...
They are never like, well, but I had so much more I wanted
they get
to talk
it.
About. Yeah.
They get it. People weighing in on the text page on OJ, I'd be a buyer if he has any driving gloves out there. The gloves are getting a lot of love, like his isotoners or whatever they were.
Well, look at it. I mean, it took forever for the Ford Bronco to make a comeback, and now it doesn't look anything like the original Ford
Does
Bronco.
Bruno Mahle still exist? The shoe company? That was the big thing, the Bruno... I never heard of Bruno Mahle shoes until the footprints outside the Brentwood house were evidence.
Well, yeah. Didn't OJ say that they were ugly shoes too, like that he wouldn't have worn them or something? Bruno Mahle is still very much around.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Yeah, they didn't take a hit from the OJ scenario.
Just so
people
you know.
Were like, oh, I'm not going to do business with this guy wearing the OJ shoes.
There are a couple people that got your trophy room reference. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
Yeah. On the text page,
you can get a pair of Bruno Mahle loafers for $249.
Okay,
is the cheapest model. Most of them seem to be around $400.
Do you own a pair of loafers?
I not loafers. I have my nice dress shoes. I lost in a move a while back. So now I never wear them anymore.
Yeah,
I've got one. I bought some. I'll tell you when you got the deals on dress shoes was during COVID.
Dude.
Yeah.
I know, like, yeah.
Nobody needed them.
No.
It was
I remember talking to Gary Dante over at Suit Mart, you know, like nobody's buying suits, you know, like even after COVID, like people still aren't going out or they learned how to work from home instead of getting dressed up.
I haven't bought a sports coat or a suit since COVID.
Yeah.
And I've got the one pair of shoes that I bought since COVID and I've worn them like twice.
Yeah.
Nice dress shoes are worth it just for the comfort side of things.
Yes.
When you wear a nice pair of shoes, you feel like, oh yeah, I could go merge in a choir right now, damn it.
You and I are not in a business that requires us to wear suits really ever for this job, other than like, you know, fancy events. And so I try to buy a couple new suits a year just because you and I, like, we MC things and there's pictures.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be the guy who's wearing the same suit for 4 years in every event that I go to. You know what I mean?
I'm also a guy. I'm very much in a position in life where I wear sneakers to almost everything unless I need actual boots.
Yeah.
But like I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I just stopped caring. And you know what the other thing is, too? I realized it was one of the advantages of playing football, like aside from, you know, all the stuff you would think of. I was around enough really, really successful people. And the more I realized, it's like, oh, a lot of these guys just do not give a damn.
Yep.
Then the guys that they're not going to kowtow to anybody's expectations about how you should dress here, or how you should dress there. So I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm going to live my life. If all of a sudden you're not going to listen to what I'm saying because of the sneakers I'm wearing or whatever, or that I'm wearing sneakers, like, I got no room
that's
for
you. That's a you
Go
problem.
Die.
Yes. Yeah, that's a you problem. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Should they change the name of the Lombardi Trophy? This was suggested yesterday by based on some audio we played from up in Boston yesterday, a very unlikely idea generator. We will have that for you coming up next.